Hey, you guys. Welcome back to Tomes of Terror, where we talk about horror books. So, as I've probably mentioned on this series before, I don't usually put a great deal of conscious thought into what books I'm going to be reading for the Tomes of Terror series. Unless, for example, one of you guys or, some like a reviewer I trust or something like that makes a specific recommendation. Most of the time, what I will do is I'll just kind of browse through whatever is available to read for free on Kindle Unlimited that has like a decently high rating and has a cover or a title that looks kind of like interesting to me. And this was the manner that I stumbled across the book that I'm talking about today, which is T.J. Payne's 2019 novel, Intercept. Now, this book actually kept turning up at the top of my Kindle recommendations, and I actually checked it out, like into my library, a long time ago, because I actually meant to get to it a couple months ago. But then other books intervened, like some people sent me some books that I reviewed, and some other things occurred, so I didn't really get a chance to read it until recently. Now, I will say that even though I'd been excited about reading it, the cover looked kind of interesting, but to be honest, I thought that it was going to be, like, just judging by the cover, I thought it was going to be like a ghost story, maybe about EVPs. I don't know why, like, the cover kind of gave me that impression, which would have been fine. Or I thought it was going to be like a science fiction story, like maybe about aliens, which I would have been like kind of meh about. However, I am happy to report that it is neither of those things. While Intercepts does have kind of like a veneer of science fiction, this is a horror story through and through. And I mean, it is pretty damn gory also. Now, I read through this one at like a lightning speed, really eager to see what the hell was gonna happen next. It's very, very briskly paced, it's very action-packed, and it kind of just like sucks you right in from the very beginning with like this whole mystery of like what exactly is like going on here. And then like as it goes on, it just keeps steadily like ramping up the stakes and ramping up the violence, until you get to the ending, which is kind of like pretty balls to the wall. It's also, I have to say, one of very few horror novels that I've read where there really aren't any all good guys or all bad guys. And, I know that's not that rare, but I'm just saying that in the sense that everybody in this, well, most people in this, like, have done kind of terrible things, but I think like the magic of the book is that the reader can sympathize with everyone's perspective because everyone is just very nuanced and very human. And it's like they do terrible things, but you can kind of like understand how they got into that position and things like that. So to me, like the moral ambiguity, I guess, of the story was a real highlight because it sort of like mirrored reality to quite an uncomfortable extent. But I really, really did like kind of where it was coming from with that. So, at the start of the novel, you get this kind of brief prologue in which someone is talking about, they seem to be like in some kind of limbo state, like unaware of who they are or where they are. They can't seem to see or hear anything. They can't like feel their body or like tell if they're moving or even tell if they're inside a body. And their consciousness just kind of seems to be floating out there in the ether. So, then we delve into the story proper. Now, most of the book is told from the point of view of like a middle-aged guy named Joe Gerhard, and he seems like a very amiable, regular Joe type of guy. Now, he manages a very secret government facility that is kind of hidden in the hills of, I think it's West Virginia somewhere. And a lot of the beginning of the story is like establishing just how covert this place is and the security measures that have kind of been undertaken to ensure that nobody in the outside world like figures out exactly what's going on there. The great thing about this story and what makes it feel a lot more kind of grounded in reality, I guess, is that in spite of the super duper classified nature of the work that goes on in this place, which is only ever referred to as the company or the facility, it's very clear that the project, whatever it is, like you find out, still suffers from just cost-cutting measures and bureaucratic bullshit. In other words, this is kind of like no ultra-high-tech concern like you would maybe see like in a big-budget Hollywood science fiction movie where everything is just kind of like top of the line. This is just an average workplace with just average-ass people, like working Joe people, like working there, like getting donuts from the break room and shit like that. And there's also like your regular stuff like you would have at any workplace. There's just kind of like idiotic rules that are completely ineffective and don't do anything. The higher ups don't have any idea what's going on at the ground level, which is one of the reasons they come up with all these stupid rules that don't do anything, and which it takes kind of like a metaphorical, or actually maybe in this case maybe a literal, like act of Congress just to get that one damn broken urinal fixed, like in the men's room. It's like that kind of thing. It's kind of like simultaneously comforting and also kind of horrifying to think that even these top secret government projects with ostensibly unlimited funding kind of suffer from the same workplace inefficiency and disorganization and just stupidity as any other company in the world. So, you know. Now, Joe, our main character, is very, very proud of the job he does at the facility. Like, one of the things that he's really proud about is that he's kind of like a Southern guy, West Virginia guy. He didn't, like, go to any fancy college or anything like that, but he, like, worked his way up and made himself, like, invaluable by pretty much knowing everything about how this whole facility functions. And he got to a point where they couldn't really manage the place without him. And he's actually, like, really proud of being able to do that, even though, like I said, he's not from some elite school or anything like that. And he's also really kind of like earned the respect and the friendship of everybody who works there. He's, like I said, very down to earth, very folksy, and he thinks that he gets a lot better results by being friends with his employees, like being warm with them, but being firm, you know, kind of like giving them some leeway and like shooting the shit and everything like that, instead of like being like a hard ass or like really authoritarian. So what exactly does this facility do, you might ask? Now, I will warn you, like I said, I'm not going to spoil the ending or anything like that, but just as with a lot of these videos, I tend to go like a little bit in depth about what's going on with the plot, and I know that some people would rather just come to stories like without knowing anything about them, and I'm like that too, which is why I don't read or reviews or watch reviews of movies or books or anything like that until after I've seen them, because I'm interested in other people's perspective on it. So if you want to come into this like not knowing anything else about it, obviously then stop now and turn back and like go read it. It's free on Kindle Unlimited, and then come back and talk about it. Like I said, I'm not going to spoil the ending, but you might not want to know some of the stuff that I'm going to talk about from this point forward, so you have been warned. So what does this facility do? Now, if you've ever read anything about the real-life Stargate Project, which I think most people know what that is, but if you don't, it was this project in which the Army and the Defense Intelligence Agency were experimenting with remote viewing. So it's like somebody that was psychic, and they could kind of maybe cast their consciousness, you know, in theory, to other parts of, like, you know, behind the Iron Curtain or whatever the hell, and could tell you, like, information, like, kind of give you, you know, it was for intelligence gathering applications. They were essentially using psychic powers for that kind of thing. So the facility in Intercepts is doing basically the same thing, and there's also kind of, like, a little bit of a hint of Minority Report in the whole scheme as well. Okay, so the facility houses a dozen men and women. They're called antennas. And they've basically been imprisoned in these cells and given a particular type of what I could determine was like an experimental nerve gas. And it seems to like suppress all of their sensory apparatus. So like they can't see anything in the room. They can't hear anything in the room. They're like, you know what I mean? I don't want to say they're in a vegetative state, but because they can still move around and like make noise and stuff, but they can't perceive anything in their immediate environment. Let's put it that way. Now, keeping the antennas in this limbo state, they have discovered, in which they can basically do nothing but roll around on the floor of their cell, like mumble and occasionally scream. Like I said, they have to have like people come in and like change their diapers and feed them and stuff like that, because they can't, they don't know anything that's going on around them. So keeping them in this state, they found out like accidentally at some point in the past, actually heightens their senses immeasurably. It's almost kind of like putting them into sensory deprivation. And then, like, while they're in this sensory deprivation, like, all the time, like, when they get brought out of it, like, all of their senses kind of, like, are heightened, you know what I mean? So whenever the staff at the facility, or the higher-ups, rather, like, when they get asked to, like, we need some information about this terrorist attack, or this head of a drug cartel, or this arms dealer, or whatever the hell, then the staff will pick one of the antennas, and they will do something called tuning them, which basically entails turning off the nerve gas that they keep them on all the time, and it kind of causes all of their senses to, like, rush back. And in this state, they actually, like, are getting, like, all these flows of information, and they found that, like, all this information is actually really good, like, actionable intelligence, because they're getting stuff, like, from the ether. Now, the sad thing about this, though, I mean, like I said, it is very effective. They can give all this, you know, information that is proven to be correct about whatever target that they've chose to, like, tune into. It also causes the antennas themselves horrible, excruciating pain and really, like, unbearable mental anguish. Like I said, he describes it, like, Joe describes it at one point. It's like, hey, you know, like, when, you know, you fall asleep on your arm and, like, your arm's asleep, and then you wake it up and it's like, and it's really, really painful, like, as the sensation comes back into it. He's like, it's like that, but, like, a million times worse, like, because they can't feel their bodies and they can't see, but then everything comes, like, rushing back to them at once when they take them off the nerve gas, and it's, like, really horrifying for them. Now, over time, the staff of the facility have kind of had to train themselves to see the antennas as pieces of equipment rather than human beings. Nobody in the facility knows where the antennas came from or who they were in their former lives, and they've kind of learned not to ask. It's very much like a not my problem, above my pay grade type of thing. Now, although it is protocol to, you know, across all of the sites, because it's implied that there's more than one, but this is, like, the most effective or most, you know, the one that has the most intelligence, it's protocol to refer to them by their numbers to further dehumanize them. But at this particular facility where Joe works, they've actually given the antennas names because they think it makes it easier to, like, refer to them, like, hey, go clean up whoever, instead of 201 or 301 or whatever. And rather hilariously, as well as kind of ghoulishly, I will say, the head doctor at the company is actually a very likable character named Dr. Hannah Chow, and she has named them all after characters in her favorite movie, which is Aliens. So all of the antennas are named, like, Bishop and Vasquez and Pharaoh and Gorman and Crow and so forth. So they're all kind of named that, which I thought was very funny, like, because they didn't actually explain that until later on, but I'm like, these are all names from Aliens. So yeah, I thought that was really funny. Now back to Joe. So, as likable a character as Joe is, and he is very likable, he was also in the past kind of a neglectful husband to his wife, Kate, and, you know, a neglectful father to his teenage daughter, Riley. So several years ago, Kate divorced him and Riley went to live with her, although she still visits her dad on the weekends. Now, he feels bad that he missed, like, a large portion of his daughter's childhood because of his work, but he kind of tries to justify it somewhat by telling himself, well, I'm doing necessary work for national security, and by protecting the country, I'm indirectly protecting my own family as well. Somebody's got to do it, might as well be me. And like I said, he is very proud of his work, but like I said, it's kind of a double-edged sword. Not too long into the story, though, Joe gets the very shocking news that his ex-wife, Kate, has committed suicide, which seems like something that she wouldn't do. So it's, like, very confusing for him. Now, Riley, who at this point is 16 or 17 years old, she comes to live with him. And he hopes that he'll be able to kind of, like, bridge the distance that's developed between them over the years since they got divorced. And you find out later on that the divorce was actually kind of his fault because, like, some fucked up shit that he did. However, shortly after Riley moves in, she starts seeing things. Specifically, she starts seeing this terrifying-looking woman with deathly pale skin and greasy black hair, and she's wearing what appears to be a hospital gown. Now, alarmingly, no one else seems to be able to see her. And at first, you know, when she tells her dad about it and tells Hannah about it and stuff like that, they kind of think, well, you know, the kid's mom just died very suddenly in a very horrible, traumatic way. So obviously this is, like, some grief processing, because this woman that she's seeing kind of looks, she knows that it's not her mom, but it kind of looks enough like her mom that people are like thinking that. As the story goes on, though, like everybody just thinks, oh, she'll work through it because she's just having problems because of grief or whatever. But as the story goes on and strange things start happening at Joe's workplace as well that seem to be connected with Riley's sightings of this woman, whoever she is, it starts to become clear that something profound and probably very, very dangerous might be happening within the minds of the antennas that are being kept at this facility. So as I mentioned, this was actually a great read. I mean, it just kind of like moves right along, like breakneck speed, and it gets more and more messed up like as it goes along. Now, the characters, most of which worked at the facility doing what are obviously horrible things to helpless human beings, were still sympathetic because they just came across as just kind of like regular working people with their own problems that just had a job to do and tried not to think too hard about like the bigger implications or consequences of the work that they were doing. So you could kind of sympathize with them to the extent that it's like you could put yourself in their shoes, even though you obviously don't, you know, want to think that it's like, well, I would never like do a job like that, but it's just kind of like, but they were still like good people, you know what I'm saying? And on the other hand, you also felt really bad for the antennas, obviously, because they were, as I said, helpless human beings. You don't really know where they came from. They could have just been snatched up off the street for all you know, or they could have been like political prisoners, who knows where they came from. And then they're doing these horrible things, so like they shave their heads and like they're just laying there pooping themselves and shit like that, and they're just like inflicting horrible pain on them, and so they're doing that. So you can kind of like understand their anguish and their motivations as well. So the story was actually really kind of nuanced in that way. It didn't really let any of the characters off the hook for the stuff that they did, but it also made you, as the reader, kind of see how they got into the position of doing those things, and you could see how that could happen, you know what I mean? So overall, like, coming at it from that angle, it was kind of like a real compelling take on how easy it is for evil outcomes to maybe like emerge from confused bureaucracies, even if no one within those bureaucracies is a particularly bad person. So it's kind of that sort of thing, you know what I mean? So if you're at all into kind of like government conspiracy type stuff, or stuff that could maybe like marginally be termed science fiction about, you know, secret agencies doing human experimentation, like especially like in regards to psychic abilities, you know, stuff like I mentioned Minority Report, or maybe something like Firestarter or Scanners or Altered States or The Fury or something like that, where there's like some kind of faceless corporation that's trying to weaponize psychic powers, essentially, then you'll probably really dig this because this is right along those lines. But keep in mind that the sci-fi element, while it is a significant part of the story, is kind of more in service to the horror. Like I said, this is a horror story. It's not really a science fiction story, you know what I mean? It has science fiction elements, but it's mostly a horror story. And believe me when I say that this thing does get skin-peelingly gory, and I actually do mean that quite literally. So if you're squeamish, might want to give it a pass. There's like a lot of people being torn apart and like stuff like that. So if you don't like that kind of thing, then maybe don't, because there's a lot of that in here, but you know what I mean. But everybody else should definitely check it out. I thought it was outstanding, and it really kind of like kept me engaged from the first page, and also had like a really good like kind of gut punch of an ending. I think, I don't know, like I don't want to say I necessarily saw the ending coming, but I was just kind of like, it almost had like this real like, I don't want to say depressing, but like a real like like inevitability to it. You're just like, yeah, of course. You know what I mean? It was just that kind of ending. But yeah, I mean, if you have Kindle Unlimited, then I would definitely recommend it. It was real good. I had a good time with it. And that will do it for this Tomes of Terror. And I will see you guys again on the next one. Bye.